Hey, thank you for tuning in, everybody, to this week's episode. Very excited that you wanted to take the time out of your week to be able to listen to this. Before I get started into our guest, I just want to thank our presenting sponsor, Optimum Nutrition Athletics. We all know that protein is the key to muscle recovery, and best-selling 100% gold standard whey protein provides 24 grams of protein that mixes easily using just a glass and spoon. Gold standard 100% whey is made in their state-of-the-art facility. It's banned substance tested by Informed Choice. And with Optimum Nutrition Athletics program, you can get different products such as their Pro Gainer, which is their mass gainer, protein snacks such as the crisp bars, wafers, cake bites, and almonds. And oh my goodness, those crisp bars, ooh, are they so good. The vanilla marshmallow one is magnificent. Recently just had the salted toffee one, I believe is the flavor. That one is wonderful too as well. Big, big fan. And after dominating the sports and nutrition industry for over 30 years, newly created Optimum Nutrition Athletics brings that same trust and quality that knows how to put convenient options for protein in the hands of athletes who desire to become bigger, stronger, and better at their sport. We're talking about the gold standard here, guys. And Dave Harvey of Optimum Nutrition Athletics, his information is down in the show notes. You can quickly email him where he'll get back to you and being able to get the products and get you what you need for your athletes and for your facility. Highly suggest you reach out to him. These are absolutely wonderful products, guys. This is the gold standard. We've all been using it. It's an awesome product, awesome company. And Dave is a wonderful person. I can't thank him enough. And for Optimum Nutrition Athletics for being the sponsor of the podcast. So, guys, make sure you reach out down there. Again, they have easy protein snacks to get into your athletes. I know how tough that can be sometimes. We don't know what's going on outside of the weight room. But, hey, you know that you can get good quality protein to them inside of the weight room with those different options that they have with the crisp wafers and cake bites with Optimum Nutrition Athletics. So again, thank you, Dave Harvey and Optimum Nutrition Athletics, for being our sponsor. And now for our guest this week, it is Drew Henley. So Drew, he works with the U.S. Army out in Fort Collins, Colorado. This is a pretty fun episode where he talks a lot about his background, where he worked in high school, private sector, professional sports, college sports, and then now working with soldiers. So it's a really wonderful episode. Can't thank Drew enough for being on the podcast. Make sure you guys give it that 5 stars on Apple Podcasts, or if you just give it a review, that would be awesome too as well, or wherever you get your podcasts at. It also helps grow the podcast if you share it. Share it with people you know. Put the episode up in your Instagram stories, or share it on Twitter. Give us a retweet or something like that. If you click down on the show notes too as well, you'll find my social media and Drew's as well. So again, thank you to our sponsor, Optimum Nutrition Athletics. Thank you for Drew for being our guest this week. Thank you for all the past guests and all the future guests, and then everybody that helps support this podcast. I hope you all have a wonderful week, and I hope this is a good quality episode that you guys like. Any comments or concerns, always feel free to reach out to me. Always looking for feedback, always looking for something to be able to help me out with the podcast. But most importantly, I care about you, care about your family, and hope you're all doing well. And everybody, stay strong. What's up, guys? Strength Talking Shop podcast. Very excited to have Mr. Drew Henley here on the podcast. How are you today, brother?
I'm doing all right, man. How about you?
Fantastic. I know we had a great conversation before the podcast. Drew's somebody that we both kind of went back and forth on social media for a little bit. So finally excited to have him on here. I know I've been trying to get him on for a while, but Drew, why don't you go ahead and give the listeners a little bit of a background on where you've been and what you're doing.
All right. So it all kind of started when I went to college as a track athlete, shot and disc, and realized that I really wanted to stay in that realm of, you know, performance enhancement, performance training, things like that. So got involved coaching high school basketball and strength coach for Coconino High School up in Flagstaff, Arizona. And my last year there, we went undefeated as I was the head coach of the freshman team. So that was a nice little send off of the basketball world. Spent a couple of years doing internships and working private sector, and then got pretty lucky and got a position with Houston Astros, stayed there for a year, and then got a two levels promotion with the Red Sox up to AA, and was with them for a little bit for a year, and then spent 7 years in college athletics, Rensselaer Polytechnic Institute, University of Redlands, and Castleton University. And for the past year and a half, I've actually been a contractor with the Army at Fort Carson in Colorado, helping train up their soldiers and transition to a new fitness test and kind of an overall new focus in fitness and performance training for them. So it's a fun little adventure.
Absolutely, man. I'm sure there's a lot of stories in there and everything. What was it like, being so young in your career, working with, professional athletes at the minor league level? What was that kind of like?
It was an adjustment. I was a hothead in college and high school because I was used to being, if not the best, pretty close to it at what I would do and when I would compete and things like that. And first thing, full disclosure, I suck at baseball. I never played anything beyond T-ball and just absolutely atrocious at it. And I stumbled accidentally into baseball and it worked really well. I got a lot of good mentors and good experiences with that. But yeah, man, the team we had, I was in Lexington, Kentucky with their low A team. And we had 7 first round picks on there that year. If you count the signing bonuses as like the salary, we had a higher salary than the Miami Marlins. It was something else. And, we had a lot of guys and I was still young. I was still a bit of a hothead and didn't realize that, it took me an extra year or two to learn when to keep my mouth shut. And the changes going from high school athletes that actually are excited and looking forward to learning from you because you're a few years older too. Now these guys are my same age, plus or minus a couple of years. And they're at the top of baseball. They're not really interested in this guy that they just met, but they gotta, you have to prove yourself, which by the end of the season, I think I did, but yeah, it was definitely something else in spring training where it's all the big league guys. It's definitely a big shift in perspective. I was kind of lucky because one of my internships was actually at a private facility that had a off-season baseball and NFL combine prep thing running kind of simultaneously. The combine started up a little bit later, but so I'm walking around in there and seeing big league guys. I'm like, hey, cool. I know you. I've seen you pitching games. Like, this is incredible. And, when you go in there and you're like, that's a Cy Young winner. That's an MVP. Okay. Whole different game at this level.
That's cool, man. That's pretty cool. So would you say probably like the biggest lesson you learned from there was just kind of being able to relate with the athletes, kind of get to do what you have planned on the sheet or for the workouts and stuff like that. And just basically like communication is probably a big thing you took from that time being in there.
Communication is huge. Especially because like I said, they're at a really high level and they worked really hard to get there. And it's a very specialized skill set that they're improving. So instead of writing everything in stone and saying, this is it, and trying to sometimes fit a square peg into a round hole,
right,
it'd be much more of like a dialogue and needing to kind of go back and forth and see what we got. And, it was because they had so much extra work that they were doing with their, individual skill coaches and things like that. It became, all right, what do you got today? All right, what do we have to do? And that give and take was huge. And it's actually come up a lot now in my job with the Army because I'm outside the chain of command, which is great. I can say anything to anybody pretty much. I mean, with certain limitations of profanities, but the downside to that is I'm outside the chain of command. I can't order anyone to do anything. So everything we kind of do is instructive and recommendations. So it's really learning how to balance getting what we need done and giving them enough of a carrot to incentivize them to do it as well. So finding that balance, finding that communication, hugely important. And like I said, that was a quick lesson coming from being a bit of a hothead to trying to actually train athletes and get positive relationships. Because I'd say even beyond the communication, relationships way more important than results in terms of getting them to improve.
Yeah, I 100% agree with that. The relationships are absolutely massive because if you don't have a relationship, why should you expect them to do anything that you tell them to do? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's crazy. I mean, I think at times too, it's just basically have a conversation with the athlete, what's going on? How are things going? And I'm sure at the pro level, I mean, there's they're just like anybody else. I feel like if, just because they're a pro doesn't mean that they're so much more elite. I mean, they're a pro at their sport. They're not a pro in the weight room per se. You know what I mean? So you still want to coach them and create that relationship so you can get them to do what you want them to do in the weight room. You know what I mean?
Yeah. One of the guys that I had who, he didn't like the warm-up that we had. This was during the internship, and he showed up late because he had something going on in the morning, some sort of commercial or something like that. And he came in and he didn't like our warm-up because it was about a half hour in terms of, you know, actually doing some static stretching, then getting the warm-up, then getting some activation stuff in there. And he's like, I can be warm in 5 minutes. And he does his little warm-up that he would do before games. I was like, you're right. You're probably fine to go. But you see that name on the outside of the building here? He wrote this warm-up. And you're paying him a good amount of money to come here and do it. I'm not debating with you that you are completely right. You can do it. But you're paying the guy. Don't you want to listen to him? And he just went, okay. That was it. There was never a debate about it after that. And it was like, oh, okay. I guess he just wanted to know that what he was doing was okay, and we weren't telling him that he had to change everything. But that was one of the quickest 180s I've seen, was just, did I miss something?
Yeah, that's crazy. Because usually, you know, you get that comeback and you've got to give your whole explanation. And I think that's where it comes down to too, as well, is like, if you can explain it super easy for the athlete and put into perspective on the why you're doing something, shoot, they'll run through the brick wall. Then you could have an athlete do wall sits for 30 minutes, but if they believe in why you're doing it, how it's going to help them in their sport, they'll do it.
Yeah.
So I want to transition to Castleton.
Yeah.
So what level was Castleton, and what was that like being the director over everything?
So Castleton is Division III. And actually my last year, second to last year, I can't remember, they transferred conferences. Most of their teams transferred conferences because they're a small school, about roughly 2,500 athletes, give or take a few. I'm sorry, not 2,500 athletes, 2,500 students. They're somewhere in the 2,000s. I'm not sure okay. where they're at. But they had over 700 student athletes. So a huge population of the student population, or a huge percentage of the student population, is our athletes. And so we got a nice little extra bit of, not necessarily funding, but attention, and because so many people were coming there for athletics. Right. And then, you know, there's always a dropout rate of athletes after their freshman or sophomore years when they're not really getting playing time or whatever that they want, or it's just not for them. And nothing wrong with that, but they'll kind of get it in the door and then stay there for the rest of their years and finish it out. So it was well known to the president that, you know, athletics is integral to this, because there was, almost 30 teams, like 27, 29 teams, somewhere in there. I can't remember. Yeah, it was an insane number of teams. And we had about a 1,600 square foot weight room that we were supposed to train all these athletes in. Yeah. So in my first performance review, I actually got one of the positives was my athletic director. She put, you know, very creative at utilizing space, because we had a hallway right outside that we would use for whatever we could, whether it be, you know, walking lunges, carries, anything like that. And then a stairs right at the end of the hallway, we would take prowlers out into the parking lot. And then on Fridays in the fall semester, we would always have what I called our blitz workouts. And it was kind of like a strongman slash, not quite CrossFit, but, you know, somewhere in there where we're just doing work capacity stuff mostly. And we would go to the football field and we would take out the sleds, we would take out the battle ropes, we'd take out, you know, the sledgehammers for the tires, and med balls, and use the stadium and things like that. And the trap bars as well, do some loaded carries, and just trying to get everything we could out of it. And that was the day that I basically said, I don't care what team you're on, what time can you come? 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. And we just had hour slots going all the way down. And we tried to make it, you know, hey, if half the team could be here, we wanted them to, but it got really competitive, which was great, because you'd have a handful of like lacrosse players against a handful of baseball players versus a handful of basketball players. And it was really awesome to see them competing and things like that. The only downside was the weather would be nice sometimes. And so some of the guys would take off their shirts and then the women would too and go to like just the sports bra. I'm like, oh God, every single male athlete's getting distracted by, you know, beautiful college women running around. I'm like, all right, new rule. Everyone has to keep their shirts on. So yeah, that was, if that's my biggest problem, it's been a pretty good situation. But yeah, it was a lot of fun working in there and getting those athletes. And, you know, just, it was a very tight knit community because Castleton is a tiny, tiny town. You don't really go into or through Castleton. You kind of just go past it if you're on your way to Rutland or anything like that. So you don't really end up in Castleton by accident, but it was really nice because the entire community really liked the athletics for the most part. But yeah, it was a lot of fun being there. And you kind of get to become part of the community. Yeah. Just because there's so many people there. And, you know, at this point, my wife and I, we would go somewhere and we would just run into a handful of athletes and became a game almost of, you know, like, all right, place your bets. Are we going to run into 0, 1, 2, or 3 of my athletes? And, you know, she would just always kind of be like, who is that? Lacrosse player. Who is that? Hockey player. And by the end of it, because I was there for 4 years, so I got to see a class all the way through, which was one of my huge, huge goals. And some of those athletes are, I'm still very close with, because, you know, they're, I feel almost like that uncle, relative, like mentor thing, where I'm just right. Like, these are good people, want to help them. And I mean, you see them grow up. Like, yeah. I tell all the athletes, your first semester coming here, you're going to do more growing up than you did the 18 years leading up to it. True. And yeah. And it was definitely awesome. And trying to juggle things between, you know, like I said, limited resources and space and time is limited for all of us, and having coaches want their teams to be number one. So there was some, you know, contentious clashes because athletics was really important, but I just had to kind of explain reality. Like, okay, here's what we have. 700 athletes, about 500 of which are at any given time working with our staff. How do you think that we're going to be able to boot a team of 25 people in this slot so that your 12-man basketball team can get in? Or that's just an example, you know, things like that. So that was where the creativity was kind of born of necessity.
Yeah, man. You just nailed a ton on the head right there as far as like communicating with sport coaches, but then also too, understanding the resources that you have available to you. I think a lot of young coaches, I think a lot of coaches think that I need 20 racks. I need all these accessory machines and all these fancy equipment, right? Well, you just showed right there, you programmed, you got the workouts exactly the way you needed for your athletes with the time constraints that you had and with the equipment that you had. You had to be creative, you know what I mean? And I think a lot of the times coaches are too stuck in their weight room of not being creative enough. Do you know what I mean?
Absolutely. And, you know, I do want to give credit to the athletic director and just the department as a whole, because when I got there, they had 3 or 4 sets of power blocks, and that was all the dumbbells that they had. And then they had a couple of kettlebells, but nothing really. And so first thing I said was, we need dumbbells. And so, you know, about a $9,000 order from $9,000, $10,000, somewhere in there from Perform Better, which, by the way, their urethane dumbbells, awesome. Like, those things, they got beat up quite a bit over 4 years and they were just good. So they invested that. And then the next year we were able to secure about another $3,000, I think, for some cable cross machine or cable pull downs. And those two things, I'm like, look, I would love to have XYZ specialty things and help out, you know, the football players, but we're talking one team versus all the others. And those dumbbells and those backs, huge. So it really, like you said, being creative and recognizing what is really important and versatile. You know, we're talking about resource allocation. What can you get the most out of a single piece of equipment? Dumbbells, huge. Obviously, racks and bars and plates, huger. TRX is really useful. The cable stacks and lat pull downs were pretty much the only other machine that we had in there. it besides the cable stacks. Everything else was, I mean, we had some leg machines that were for like the athletic trainers. But yeah, it was definitely learning how to make do with what we had. And in programming as well, what's going to be the backlog? Like, we had two of the cable stacks and we had four racks, five, if you want to count one that we didn't, that we kind of reserved for other people, not the main team lifting. And like, that's obviously going to be a backlog. So we had to shorten up the reps on that, not do a ton of, you know, row and eccentrics and things like that. But it did force me to be creative, and that's been helpful here with the Army. Cause yeah, you know, we have, before COVID, I want to preface, we had a few gyms that were massive. We're talking 9 or 10 racks, 9 or 10 platforms, same number of cable stacks, sleds, yoke bars, med balls, Atlas stones, Atlas, the sandbag Atlas stones, and all the dumbbells and everything that you could ever want. And also we would have, so like I said, there's the new fitness test called the Army Combat Fitness Test, or ACFT, and it requires some equipment, trap bar, sled, plates, kettlebells, and a med ball. And so for each unit, they would send a set number of these ACFT test kits to run one lane of people doing this. And we would have some people doing that. So they had one trap bar, one med ball, two 40-pound kettlebells, their pull sled, and the plates that they have. And that was it. And we had a program with that versus this massive weight room with everything you could ever hope for. Yeah. So switch things around is huge when working with this environment. And thankfully, I mean, one of my coworkers told me that I'm a mad scientist when it comes to getting things out of what we have. And I wasn't sure if that was a compliment or a, you know, cursing my name under his breath a little bit, but.
No, man, I love it. You got to get as much of the juice out of the squeeze as you possibly can, especially with limited resources like that. I find it to be really fascinating when you have those limited resources, and we, you know, as coaches, you always have your own set training principles. Was it easy for you to kind of be creative in that aspect because you had like your X, Y, and Z for training principles? And if it didn't fit the training principles, well, then we really don't need to throw it in there. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So it really was the, do we need to do this, and setting priority of need to do or need to have in terms of equipment, you know, exercise selection, want to have, and just would be nice. Yeah. And so three tiers really help break things down along with recognizing resource allocations. So we had, when I started there, we had an assistant strength coach and one GA. And then we added another assistant strength coach. And then because of budget cuts, we went down, one of the assistant strength coaches was, it was like some sort of program. I don't remember what it was. So she wasn't a normal strength coach, if that makes sense. It was part of I can't remember what it was, but my last year there, we ended with just two GAs. And it was really, really important that with the new people, we kind of went over programming and just kind of detailing. Oh, actually the last year we also did have an assistant who was our field hockey coach. She was great. So we kind of went over first month or so of, hey, you know, here's what we have, and kind of had them walk me through programs, and I would oversee, and the GAs, I would write the first couple months of programs for their teams and then ask them to, you know, write the next phase so that I could see and poke holes in it. Like, okay, well, you got two different exercises using the cable stacks. We're not going to be able to. You've got dumbbell rows, like neon bench, dumbbell rows, and barbell bench press. Well, we can't really do that if we're talking about a fully stacked weight room. Just kind of poking holes with that. And with our internship program as well. And one of my GAs, phenomenal. Am I allowed to say his name?
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
Matt Hyde. Dude is amazing. All right. Him and then the GA I had at University of Redlands, AJ Milton. Any hiring coaches that see their names pop up, hire them. Best decision you'll make. And he took Matt took over the internship program and kind of was running it his second year. One, because I was running around like a chicken with my head cut off. And two, because I wanted him to get to be put on his resume that he had supervisor experience. And whew, boy, you know, I'm good at a few areas in coaching and I'm not so good at others. And he blew away everything I've done with interns before and since then. And just him running that program, he had weekly talks with them, weekly meetings, oversaw, you know, giving them reading articles, getting their like feedback on different things and kind of handling the schedule and everything like that. And boy, did it pay off. That was our best year of interns with him doing and just crushing it. And so we went from having, you know, two or three coaches to now we've got that plus four interns that were basically able to run things if we were out of the room. And I mean, that's huge. Like, you don't want, you want interns to develop from just cleaning things or racking weights or anything or spotting to being able to do things. And, you know, I've had a negative internship experience as well as positive ones. And it went, the negative one was just grunt work and nothing else and not really developing as a coach versus if I was an intern, I would want to work with him and do what he was doing because he was really good at kind of gauging how long of a leash each person should have and increasing their load. And boy, did that make a difference as we went on.
Yeah. I mean, it gives them a sense of pride and to take, you know, ownership over what their role is as an intern and everything like that. I think as a coach, even as an intern, a GA, an assistant, or a director of performance, like you've got to take ownership of what you're doing inside of the weight room and how you're educating yourself and then how you're coaching up the athletes and the people that you're working with. But, you know, my question for you, and I was thinking about this a second ago, like you've worked with high school athletes, college athletes, pros, and now you're working with the Army. What has like been an overall thing that you've kind of seen at all levels as far as like getting them prepared for their, say the Army, like they're preparing for, you know, whatever they're preparing for, the college are preparing for their sport, high school and such like that. What is the overall theme that you've kind of seen that has really helped develop them in the weight room so they can get better for their game day?
So number one has been keeping them healthy. You know, that's been throughout my career, that's been the priority. You know, yeah, it was nice when I was in high school and college to do heavy stuff as often as possible. And now I've got a messed up back and two messed up knees from it. I'd rather my, you know, soldiers and athletes not have to go through that whole thing.
Right.
But yeah, kind of focusing on working with both the sport coach and the athletic trainers and making sure that, hey, we want to actually build forward towards something. And it all goes back to communication as well. You know, we're talking, particularly with young men that are high school, college, and early years of pros and early years in the military. They're all young. They're all pumped full of testosterone and want to kind of get after it and pick up heavy stuff and get massive and shredded and everything like that. And so kind of convincing them that, hey, you know, you can do a killer workout today and be sore for a few days and put yourself at a higher risk of getting hurt. Or we can just take one step instead of trying to leap forward and then stumble and falling backwards. So kind of getting that proper communication where, hey, keep your eyes on the prize and focus that this is not a sprint. This is not a one-day event. We're talking years and years, and your body will thank you in staying healthy. And so we want to make sure that we learn the movements correctly, you know, squat and hip hinge, pulling and pressing, carrying your own body weight and being able to move with it, move under load. Like that's been huge at every level. One thing I wish I did more when I was starting out was having people do more load carriage and just loaded carries, sled work, vests, anything like that, where they're just kind of putting extra stress on their body while moving. Cause that's been huge in helping soldiers and a lot of my college athletes in staying a little bit healthier, a little bit, more resilient. So just the communication and trying to get them to realize that there's more than just today. We're talking years down the road that we don't want to have setbacks.
Yeah, you talked about that, and I've read your article recently about the loaded carries and everything like that. And I can say from a personal standpoint, you know, my conditioning is a lot of weighted vest walks and a lot of weighted carries and stuff like that. And I have seen tremendous change in my training sessions, you know, for my bench, squat, and deadlifts. I mean, it has been crazy how my conditioning has just helped so much. And honestly, the weighted vest walks, they're really low intense. I mean, my heart rate does not get up super duper high, but it's enough of a stressor, like you said, to where it's almost like it's a conditioning recovery method that you can kind of sometimes play around with. Have you kind of seen that too as well with those?
Totally. And so we train, like we'll sometimes work with guys going to like selection. So special forces selection or trying to go to Ranger school or, you know, different competitions that there are. And we'll set up not individual, but smaller group things. Cause usually we're working at the company level, which is roughly 100 people. So it goes division, which is what we have, 4th Infantry Division, brigades, and then battalions within the brigade, and then companies within the battalion, and then platoons and squads. Okay. So there's a lot of levels, but really our main focus is the company level. And there's usually 5 or so in each battalion, and there's 5 to 7 battalions in a brigade. Okay. So a brigade's about 3 to 4 to 5,000 people. So we would get these smaller things where we're talking like 10 to 20 guys, and they're highly dedicated, highly motivated, because, you know, they want to make this leap in their career. And one of the things that we would have them do, because a lot of the schools will have significant ruck marches, and like they'll have to just basically be able to ruck multiple times, which is loading up your pack and just going on the hike, essentially. That's a little bit oversimplified, but it gets the point across. And so one of the things that we kind of played around with, and I got the idea from Dan John's book, Never Let Go, where he's on the cover and he's dragging a sled and I think he's wearing a vest and he's holding like a sandbag or something like that. I'm like, you know what? We're going to try that out. So we had sled drags with farmer carry for the first week. And then we went sled drag with a Zercher carry with like a log bar. So it was nice and round and not just digging into their elbows, but it also meant that they had to do a bicep curl essentially the whole time. And then the third week we grabbed some of the Atlas stone bags and had them just bear hug it and do it with the sleds. And, you know, they hated it. And probably in hindsight, having highly trained soldiers do something and want to hate, you know, end up hating me, probably not the best life decision, you know, but I am still here. So yeah, and it worked really well. And that was actually, I think, the time where my coworker called me a mad scientist for having them do that. So, but yeah, we program in some sort of carry or some sort of sled work pretty three times a week, I'd say, in general.
I love that. And it's something that's, you don't need a lot of equipment really to do that with. I mean, shoot, for my sled drag, I use an old tire, you know what I mean? And I load it up with weight. So it's something that I think most coaches at all levels, wherever you're coaching at, it's something really easy to program in for A, like a main workout, or B, a good recovery workout, in my opinion. I think it's a no-brainer to add it in. So I think you're really smart and be able to do that.
Yeah, and I mean, even if we're not able to do the sled work, if you just want to carry stuff, grab 2 45s, you know, one in each hand, especially if you got handles, or grab a bumper plate or two and go with like a Zercher carry with them. And then you don't need anything more. We were doing that in the hallway because you don't need a bar and a Zercher carry. And so you can go a little bit narrower and be able to do it. And it made a huge, huge difference. And if you got guys that are like, oh, that's a little too easy. Okay, well, guess what? Now you get to do it and add the sled, or, you know, make them carry the thick 45-pound bumpers that are about that big and a little bit harder to grip. All sorts of different things. And yeah, just moving your body under load, man. Huge, huge help.
Well, for me, like I used to do a lot of yoke carries. It just teaches, it emphasizes again, that bracing that you have to do. And when you have to pick something up, like that's the best core work you could possibly do when you're doing like a really heavy farmer's walk, or even like you said, just holding 45s, or if I'm doing that Zercher holding out, man, first bicep pump. We all like a good bicep pump, obviously, but man, that's going to ignite your core big time.
Yeah.
And you talked about early with the injury resilience, like, are we wanting to have like less low back problems? You know what I mean? Like for me, it's a no brainer.
Yeah. And, you know, even outside of athletics or military or any dedicated application of training for a sport or for something in your career, we're talking, you want to be able to pick up your kids or your grandkids and things like that.
Yes.
You know, like that's huge. And I forget what commercial it was like during the holidays last year, the one where he was picking up a kettlebell, you know? And it's like, yeah, that's right on point. Like you want to be able to pick up your niece, pick up your granddaughter. Like if I couldn't pick up my niece, I would hate it because she's a crazy little, you know, child running around and I need to be able to pick her up and go on fun little adventures, but can't do that if everything is broken.
No, and I completely agree, man. I mean, I love that video too, by the way. That video is so dang good. I love that video. Yep. Super inspirational too.
Yeah, somebody on Twitter was like, this is what Rogue should have been pitching to sell out all their like, just, this should be your commercial. Like, even if you just say, Rogue approves this message, and then throw that on there. Like, that'll help them out a ton. Because, it was like, all right, what are they getting at here? And then,
you're like, I'm a little misty-eyed here. This is really good. I do have the question here real quick. How has, like, your own training affected the way that you coach the athletes? You know, I've had this discussion a lot with coaches and the fact of, like, you know, Jim Wendler had an amazing article. This is the second week in a row I've talked about it, but where he just talked about, like, when his training is going well, it reflects onto his athletes as well. How have you kind of seen that with your own self?
So I try to keep it pretty separate because, you know, what I really want to be, and I'm not the best at this, I'm not even, you know, above average at this yet, is trying to be a little bit more consistent where the soldiers aren't going to know when I've had a good day versus when I've had a bad day. And like I said, I've got some low back issues and I actually tore one of the deep muscles along in the thoracic spine area a couple years ago. And my knees are ground down to pretty much nothing at this point. So I've had to get creative in terms of modifying my own exercises and coming up with just not even progressions or regressions, but just modifications and tweaks.
Yeah.
And so that's helped a ton because soldiers, they have such a different injury profile than athletics. Because if you look at football, you're going to be able to identify what the common injuries are going to be. You're going to have concussions. You're going to have shoulder injuries. You're going to have knee and predominantly ACL things and ankles, you know, maybe some hip flexor or hamstring, but mostly those ones. Soldiers, it can be anything. Because if they stumble down while rucking, if they on one of their jumps, they land funny, you know, jumping out of an airplane can be a little bit tricky. Or if they're in combat and get hit by an IED or something like that, like there's just so many uniquely traumatic injuries that happen where it's not fitting into the normal profile. And so you can't just go with your normal bag of tricks. You have to have a little bit deeper bag. And so being able personally to know, all right, how am I modifying my hip hinge? How am I modifying my squatting? How am I modifying, you know, all these other things that I'm doing and making sure that I'm still able to train and get what I want out of it? That's been probably the most helpful thing is, you know, I work really hard at staying in my lane and not crossing over into athletic trainers. Cause let's face it, it would drive us crazy if an athletic trainer started writing programs for a healthy athlete and they've got the education that I don't have. You know, it's foolish to try to handle it all yourself, but when it's something small, I'm like, oh, this is irritating my knee. Okay, try this. Okay, try this. Still nothing? Okay, now you're going to the athletic trainer, you know? And that's been probably the best thing of my training carrying over to my soldiers and athletes.
I love that, man. And you said something super important there, staying in your own lane. I think it's at times, and listen, guilty as charged right over here, you'll see something on social media and you're like, I kind of like that. And sometimes it is something that you can use for your program, whether that be for your athletes or for yourself. But sometimes it's a lot of mumbo jumbo that you don't really need to be doing. It's just flashy stuff. You know what I mean? So stay in your lane, know what you know, and do that.
Yep, 100%. And that's actually kind of flipping that switch from trying to do everything myself and act like I know it all to nope, no clue, pass it on to someone that does, has been one of the most important steps in my career and being able to say just flat out, I don't know. You know, that's not what I do. That's outside of my realm of expertise. And, you know, like diet and nutrition and things like that, that's mostly out of my expertise as well. I focus on, we're going to pick things up, we're going to run fast and lift heavy and look good, you know? So and side of those goals is someone else's domain.
Yeah. I mean, if it was down to me for diet and nutrition, man, we'd all be big fellas. That'd be my opinion for me.
You know,
we'd be eating ice cream all the time.
Yeah. Ice cream, fried chicken, some chocolate in there, you know, all the good stuff.
Absolutely, man. A lot of double cheeseburgers would be throwing them down. No, I'm just kidding. But Drew, I'm excited to have you on here, man. I just have one last question that I have here for you. I know I told you before the podcast, get you ready for it, but I'm going to start ending podcasts on this. Worst job you ever had prior to being a strength coach?
So after my freshman year of college, went back home and worked overnights at Home Depot, unloading freight and things like that. And It's just highly monotonous. And just like that was killer on my back and knees, because you're talking about, yeah, it's not always heavy, but I did have the paint section. I remember that. And so you're talking, you know, multiple gallons of paint, things, just the handles digging into your fingers and things like that and all that fun stuff. And the worst part was it's screwing with your sleep cycle, because you go to work at 10 o'clock at night and then get off at 6 a.m. And so it definitely threw a wrench in, because it was after my freshman year. It was summer. I was still a kid. I was still like, no, I want to hang out with my friends and stuff like that. So sometimes I would try to push through it. And yeah, some of my friends can attest to my loopiness. I was trying to do something in the morning. And yeah, that was a grind. Most definitely. That was interesting.
That's crazy. That's a tough job right there, man. Any kind of like where you're moving stuff around, especially at nighttime, oof, brutal job. Oh,
yeah. Yeah. And honestly, the sleep cycle is what screwed me the most. And I thought, you know, oh, I already have insomnia, I'm going to be awake. Nope. Big difference between not being able to fall asleep and trying to do a job when you should be asleep, you know?
Trying to change that circadian rhythm was, I'm sure, very, very fun.
Oh, yeah. Tons of it.
I know I said I had one last question, but I do have one more. What would some advice that you would have for coaches for coaches out there? Just any kind of advice that you would give them.
Communication is huge. And like you kind of touched on, don't get sucked into the fancy new things. Like the best results I've had are from just keeping things simple. And you know, one of my articles that I have on the site is a training checklist. Do we really need to be doing this? How are we doing this? And it makes life a lot easier when you just go, okay, this will be fun. Like I try to build my programs out with about 75% things I know are going to work and are going to be consistent and may sometimes be boring. So I got to find a way to keep them from being boring. And then the other 25% are things that we're trying out, seeing how it's working, and just also that specialized stuff that we may need depending on the specific demographic or specific people we're working with. Those two things, just keeping things simple and sticking to the basics. And lastly, just communication. I mean, we've circled back on that how many times right now? Yeah. And it's huge. Like everybody's got their own thing. Stress in the weight room or with any sort of training session is not all the stress going on somebody. For the soldiers, they got a lot of other duties that they got to do. And for collegiate athletes, especially, you're talking about one, they're off living on their own for the first time, probably. Two, they're now doing a lot of work with their sport, with their team. Three, they've got all their class load and homework load and whatever study hall or things like that. And I know at Castleton, they have required a community service as well. And they still want to have life. Yeah, they still want to have a social life and be able to do stuff. So, and with that social life comes relationship problems or family problems or things like that. And there's a ton of extra stress beyond what we're putting on them. So you're not going to know about it unless there's a communication, you know, and still something I'm improving on, because I still have that 20-year-old hothead in me a little bit. So, you know, I wish I matured out of it, but I've reeled it in a little bit, still working on it.
Hey, listen, we're all improving every single day, man, for sure. But hey, at least you're self-aware. Some people aren't even self-aware. They're like, whatever.
Yeah.
They just keep digging themselves in the same hole, but I can't agree with you enough on the communication. I know we're both married as well. And like communication and marriage is huge. Communication is huge in the job that you have. It's huge in the family that you have. I mean, down to everything, like if you don't have communication, like right now, if like we don't know how to communicate with each other on this podcast, guess what? Nobody's going to get anything out of it. You know what I mean? Like you have to be able to have conversation and understand, like when things are tough, like have a tough conversation or just get to know somebody. Like, let's just talk. That's the main thing.
Especially now with hopefully a lot of these restrictions are going down because COVID and stuff like that. But you know, life isn't going to be the same after this. There's going to be a lot more remote coaching, remote teaching and things like that. So if you can't communicate, if you can't figure out a way to get your message across without it just becoming noise, then you're not going to get very far and you're going to run into a lot more frustrations and troubles. So yeah, being able, it's not just the words you say either. It's making sure you're saying the right thing the right way and the person is hearing it. And that falls under you as a, even as a speaker, if they're not hearing you correctly, then it's still on you as much as it can be.
Do you think sometimes as well, it's like how you listen as well? I think that's even most important. It's like how you listen to the communication that's coming from you. But it could be either what's coming out of their mouth or the body language too, I feel like.
100%. You know, it's, you're talking about input and output. So you got to get actually understanding what the heck's being said instead of just having a script or prepared statement where nothing's going to change your mind on things. You need to be, you need to adapt. And I kind of realized I was losing some of my, emphasis on some of my arrogance when I had an athlete tell me I'd said the wrong thing during a lift after I'd kind of chewed him out for it. I don't remember exactly what it was. I said something and then chewed him out because he was doing it differently. And he's like, no, you said this. I looked around and the whole team was like, yep. Oh, my bad. Sorry. That's on me. Cause it's, you got to be listening. You got to be paying attention. Even if it's the message you're putting out, you got to make sure everybody's on the same page. Like if an athlete is going through family trouble, like we've all lost loved ones one way or another, and being able to understand like, hey, okay, let's take the foot off the gas, go home, do what you got to do or whatever you can do to realize that they're athletes, they're soldiers, they're your personal training clients, they're whatever they may be, but they're also humans. You know, we all have the same, we all face similar struggles in terms of love and loss, man. Like we got to make sure that we're still communicating and still on the same page.
Leave it better than, you know, when you first came there, in my opinion, like make the person, build them up, and then let's just have a good time. It should be fun. Like it should not be a stressful kind of thing. It should be fun.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, like you said, I'm working on getting better every day. And if I can help others with that, great.
Well, I know you've helped me a lot on this podcast, man. I know this is a great episode, but if you want to go ahead and plug like your social media, I know you got a website too as well. Go ahead and plug all that information. So if listeners want to reach out to you and follow you, how they can do it.
Great. Yeah. So website is powerplantstrong.com and social media on Twitter and Instagram at Drew B. Henley, and it's Drew, then B as in Bravo, Henley, H-E-N-L-E-Y. Trying to put up content pretty frequently. And yeah, any followers, anybody with any questions, feel free to shoot them over. Appreciate it, man.
Yeah, Drew, I appreciate you being on the podcast today, man.
Thanks, man. Really glad to be here. It was a lot of fun.
Absolutely. Well, hey, everybody, make sure you reach out to Drew. Like I said, great guest. It's a good episode. Reach out and listen to some of his content that he's got up there. Really liked his last article he had on the Loaded Carries. And everybody, stay strong. Look at that. You made it all the way to the end of the episode. Well, that's an awesome episode. So thank you so much for our sponsor, Optimum Nutrition Athletics. Make sure you guys reach out to Dave Harvey of Optimum Nutrition Athletics on how you can get that into your facility. Again, his information is down in the show notes. Thank you to our guests this week. Thank you to everybody that supports the podcast. Make sure you give it that 5 stars on Apple Podcast or wherever you get your podcast at. And everybody, stay strong.